Jennifer, and thanks for organizing this panel. And hi to all of you. The way we were going to do this, I was going to come after Dorothy. So in order to do that, I just have to set the scene, which is Dorothy's going to tell us some phenomenal things that have been done and are going on in Canada. And I think one of the things to remember here is that in the United States, we are around hovering, 12% unionized, 7% in the private sector. In Canada, it's still, 30-35%? Is that, in some parts, but certainly more than here. And I think some of the legal structures reflect some of those basic differences of union density and power. So Dorothy's just done, all this stuff, and now I was going to talk about one little piece, one little law in which we may have some rights to consider and something for Canada to look at, but mostly I think we look to Canada for many things. So let's see if we can... there we go. That way. All right. Disclosure, no disclosures. Okay. So as Steve was saying, this is the context for sort of occupational safety and health and the things that he was saying. We did a survey last year at our conference, 532 delegates, and they rank ordered, the question was, what's happening in your workplace that's causing your members to be injured, made ill, stressed on the job? And this is in order. So, lack of or inadequate training, downsizing, understaffing, production pressure, increased workload, discipline for safety, all of these things are being identified as major health and safety issues. And so work organization features prominently in that. And while, in Canada there is more protection on work organization issues within the law, there's very little in the United States that deals with that at all. So problems. And then when we talk about what's happening in the workplace, things are getting worse because of how management is reorganizing jobs. And it doesn't matter whether you work in a steel mill, or you're in mining, or you're in healthcare, or you're a bus driver, or you're a librarian. We're seeing these trends: standardization, de-skilling, intensification of work, or leaning out, or what we used to call old-fashioned speed up, multi-skilling, job combination, what employers call flexibility, automation, new technologies, constant monitoring. And then outsourcing and moving work. And then the impacts of these trends, tremendous negative impacts on workers, ranging from, job insecurity and job loss to health and safety impacts, increased injuries, stress, isolation, illness, and also negative impacts on unions themselves. As this is happening to our members, unions have increased workloads because we've got to fight against disciplines and those kinds of things. At the same time, we have decreasing membership. We have isolation, divisions creating within the membership, loss of solidarity and loss of faith in the union. So there's tremendous negative impacts from the way the work process has changed and the constant turbulence, the constant changes. One way of looking at what's happening in the workplace is that management is renegotiating our work every day. Every time they make a change, it's like a renegotiation, except we're not at the table. So here's our little schematic about areas where struggle is happening. And traditionally within the labor management relationship. And so one key area is contract bargaining. That's a struggle, right? And then, if and when we get our contract, and hopefully it's the best one we can get, there's contract enforcement, or what employers might see as the contract avoidance period. And then there is one other area of struggle that we'll put up there, and that's the change of the work process. So Where's management putting most of its resources in these arenas? Anybody? Okay. Work process change every day. This is where their resources are going. What are we going to be doing about it? So here's a little cartoon to describe the situation. It says, not everyone who plays the game sees the rules the same as you do. We're playing this labor management thing, and management is coming in with new tools and new weapons and GPS and, you know, who knows what it is tomorrow that sort of changes the game. And so in terms of our traditional tool, grievance arbitration, all right? And so they bring in something, they bring in, you know, blame the worker safety program, and, you know, we grieve it, and 2 years later, you know, we get to arbitration, and an arbitrator is there because they decide 50-50, that's why they're there, you know, so we're in a crapshoot. In the meantime, people have, you know, lost jobs or, you know, had bad impact and you know, some real problems there. And the other thing I'm going to say is one of the things that happens because of this structure is that when we are fighting for our contract, we are a movement. We are a labor movement. We are active. We're doing things. We're engaged. We're engaging our members. We're a movement. And then after the period of the contract negotiations, I'm going to say this harshly, we turn into a law firm. All right, we're a law firm now. We enforce the contract. We have these people called stewards. And if I have a problem as a member, I go to a steward and I say, fix my problem. And don't put my name on it. And, you know, and if it doesn't get fixed, it's there. You know, I have a bad lawyer. And I think about the union as, you know, I pay a retainer to my law firm, except it's called dues. But, you know, it's kind of, so we're a movement, and then we're a law firm, and we wonder why people don't come to meetings. And, you know, there's a lot that, you know, has happened because of this kind of movement law firm contract, you know, campaign to contract enforcement, which isn't to say grievance arbitration isn't important. It's very important. And getting the best contract we can get is very important. But these days, what I am going to say is not enough. And what we end up with sort of in that world is this situation. They bring in GPS, they bring in, you know, you name it, you know, behavior-based safety, they bring in, okay, three people used to do that job, now one person's going to do it, whatever it is. And so we're sitting there like the tool guys say, hey, they're lighting their arrows, can they do that? And so things keep coming at us, right? And we're kind of ill-prepared. So here's the question, can they do that? Can they keep doing these things and renegotiating our workplace? And the response really is only if we let them. So what we have, and that's supposed to change there. Okay, so what I want to talk a little bit about is one piece of a law that's on the books in the United States. And the law is the National Labor Relations Act, and it's our right to do midterm bargaining. And this is not an individual right, it's a union right. So this is if you're in a union, you have these. And so what the basic thing is, and there's a fact sheet over there that lays this out, is a provision in our bargaining law that says the employer and the union must bargain collectively with respect to wages, hours, and terms and conditions of employment, and failure to bargain collectively on these issues is an unfair labor practice. So there's legal principles here. And if anybody has Bob Schwartz's book, Legal Rights of Union Stewards, chapter 6 in that book is all about this right. But what do we have to bargain over? We have things called mandatory subjects of bargaining. So that's everything from absentee policies to bathroom breaks to safety rules, production quota, workload, work rules, dress codes, new positions, hours, shifts. That means any time that management wants to change one of these things, we may, in fact, have the right to bargain over it, all right? There are also voluntary or permissive subjects of bargaining, which means there's nothing that compels management to bargain with us over these. If we both mutually decide, we can, but that's things like production methods or the price of the employer's products. The duty to bargain exists all the time, not just at contract time. It's 24/7. That's something that does give us the right to interact. If management is renegotiating our workplace every day, then maybe we need to be bargaining every day on those issues. And what we can say is management can't make a unilateral change. And how the law works is they have to do two things. If they want to change one of those mandatory subjects of bargaining and it's not covered in the collective bargaining agreement, they have to notify the union and provide an opportunity to bargain. All right, those are the two management duties. So if they say, we want to bring in a blame the worker safety program in 3 weeks, and they've done it in writing to the union, they've just discharged their duty, they're done, then it's on the union to promptly request bargaining. If we do nothing, if we say nothing, and time goes by, we can have waived the rights that we have. So it's very important anytime there's a change for unions to think what we hear that management wants to do, think of it as a proposal. And our response when they want to do anything new, change a safety rule, change an absentee policy, bring in safety discipline, is to say the following in so many words. What an interesting proposal. We will meet you at the bargaining table. And that is our right to do everything they do and say we should hear as a proposal. So employers have defenses against this. They can say, well, the change we want to make isn't significant enough. They can say the union didn't request bargaining promptly. And then the third one is, well, we have a management rights clause. Now, the way this works is that in many contracts there is a clause that says management has the right to run the business and make reasonable rules. Well, the way the National Labor Relations Board sees this, management has the right to make reasonable rules, and that doesn't take away the union's right to bargain over them. The difference between bargaining and grievance arbitration is if they brought in something and we did grievance arbitration, that rule is in effect until we can win its ouster, which may be 6 months later or 2 years later. In bargaining, they can't start the thing. They can't put the new rule in place. They can't begin whatever it is until the conclusion of bargaining. So we're in a better footing if we can get it into bargaining. The management says they have, these rights, and will always tell unions, well, management rights, trumps your right to bargain. But in fact, the board has a standard, and there has to be a clear and unmistakable waiver of a bargaining right in order for management rights to prevail. So if there was language that says management can bring in any kind of behavior-based safety program they want, and that's what we signed in a contract, then we wouldn't have the right to bargain over that because we've waived our rights in the contract. But if it just says management has the right to make policies and rules, or sometimes even safety policies, that's not a clear and unmistakable waiver of our right to bargain. They make it, we get to bargain it. The other thing is, even if it's a situation where we don't have bargaining rights, if we have language that says management can set staffing for every job, and we've signed off on that, if they make a two-person job into a one-person job, we can still demand bargaining over the health and safety impacts that that will create, and that sometimes gives us the right to do what we need to do so that the two-person job stays a two-person job. So that's what we have there. The right to bargain is only the right to bargain. It gets us to the table at times. It doesn't give us the right to win. So we have to do some other things. Bargaining results in either agreement or impasse. Agreement is we agree on something. Impasse is we are at loggerheads, nobody's moving. At that point under U.S. labor law, management gets to do what it wants. So we don't want to get to impasse because management can implement. So there are some union strategies. The first one is about submitting information requests, and I have a fact sheet about that. But if we put in our right to bargain and put in information requests, for every information request that doesn't get responded to by management, that can be an unfair labor practice charge. And if we reach some kind of disagreement and it looks like it's impasse, if there's one information request question out there that they haven't responded to, we are not at impasse. So we need information to help us bargain. Information requests also help preserve the bargaining process. And the other thing is we want to do something besides just use a legal tool, and that's using what we call a continuous bargaining approach and campaign throughout. So what does that mean? To describe it, think back to contract bargaining and what unions do or should do to build our power. We don't just sit at the table. We do things. We organize. We find allies. We do any number of things along with the table activity. Those things generally go in these categories. We do research and information gathering. We communicate and involve members. We have our proposals and demands, and we exercise leverage. In a continuous bargaining approach, we do the same things. It's just not a contract time. We do it all the time. If we're taking on getting rid of a blame the worker program that they want, we would do these kinds of things to build our leverage. So they might involve things like buttons and t-shirts, and we're going to not observe people and their unsafe acts. We're going to observe the hazards and make our own checklists. We're going to use complaint form books. We have something called the Specifically Observed Bosses form, or the SOB form for short, which has workers identify when bosses do bad behavior, like make people work short-staffed or in an unsafe condition, or when the boss is performing bargaining unit work, whatever, and that gets turned into the union, and the union makes these big lists of bad boss behavior. Again, not one of these things on its own is going to, you know, win, but we're going to have this dynamic going on. The idea is that we want to get to the bargaining table. That could be figuratively, that could be literally, but we want to get to the table. The final slide I have kind of sums it up. If you are not at the table, you will be on the menu.